Welcome. This is Winning at Life, live financial news talk radio. We're here with you the next hour. What would you like to talk about? Your annuities, your savings, the 401k. You're going to have enough money? Do you have enough emergency money? Any debt you want to discuss? 504-260-0995 to reach our hotline for a conversation. I'm your host, Gregory Ricks.
I'm your co-host, James Parker. Got a couple of highlight calls that we're going to run by you from the Saturday version of the show. And Gregory, you know, we had that discussion earlier today. I went back and pulled some audio of that 60 Minutes report. I don't know if we can do that today. Maybe we'll do it tomorrow. But I've got it ready, and there's a little backstory just to something they threw out at the end that really kind of ticked me off. So I had to do a couple of Google searches. So if you want me to completely dismantle it and humiliate,
was it the back end I told you about that bothered me of that story? The one in particular?
I don't remember what was the part that bothered you.
The end of it. Just the do nothing Congress.
Oh, no. See, that's the part. Well, hell, do you want to do this topic?
So what part did was it of that story I pointed out?
Well, the do nothing Congress is, thank goodness they did nothing, because the alternative that they're wanting Congress to act on is the Law of the Sea Treaty. That's come up on the show before. I remember I had to look a bunch of stuff up in 2012 over this thing.
What is the Law of the Sea Treaty?
Yeah, so just to save the guy listening from having to go back to our podcast 7 years ago, it's something the UN came up with in the late 70s, early 80s, that would basically turn the oceans into a jurisdiction of the United Nations. Right now, our ships can go from our ports and go across the ocean to somebody else's port and go dock in someone else's waters. And no one's going to mess with us. Why? Well, because the U.S. Navy will come knock a snot bubble out of them. Well, they want to make the UN. The UN wants to be the police of the shipping, all the shipping lanes of the world. The United States is like, no, we're not giving you. You don't get to parcel out parts of the Pacific Ocean. If we want to go dig these nodules off the seabed, we'll do it whenever and wherever we want, as long as we're not within someone's territorial continental shelf. No, we're not. We're not signing on to this.
Well, it looked like to me it's being parceled out.
Yeah, UN's parceling. I mean, for whatever power like that holds.
So we're not acknowledging their parceling.
Yes, we're not. We don't even acknowledge the group that's claiming to do the parceling.
Okay, so what? Well, heck.
The thing
we've already teased it. Look, 60 Minutes last night, and I kind of watched that as one of my core news shows. I had a little bit of different feeling about it when it came on the air last night, result of the Jamie Dimon interview and how that was so slanted, because it doesn't feel so good, this economy that's roaring along, by Leslie Stahl. So it just, I've got like, there's a little bit of a slant to this news show that's been on forever. But look, there are some good stories, and especially that second one last night. I don't even remember the first one. It was
the anti-gun one. The guys in Colorado that aren't enforcing the red flag laws in their counties.
That was interesting. I recommend you go to 60 Minutes, take a look at that. But the second one has to do with cobalt.
We'll let them explain it. What, okay. These deep sea nodules that they found not too long ago, they ran some tests on them, and they're starting to pick these little rocks up off the bottom of the seabed, and they're pretty useful.
It's just amazing when you go look around and you're needing something, and it shows maybe it's hard to get, but you know, when we need something, it's there.
Right. Kind of. That's nice how it eventually shows up somewhere. So 3 miles.
It's amazing.
And it just, there's a weird geological formation in the Pacific Ocean that there's this area that's about the size of maybe Alaska-ish. It's about an oval shape where they keep finding these rocks on the seabed 3 miles down. And
what makes them so valuable? What is in that?
Well, that is a electric vehicle battery in a rock.
It looks like a lump of charcoal.
It does, but it's a beautiful lump of nodule. The amazing thing is it's filled with nickel and cobalt and copper and manganese, And that's everything we need to build a battery.
Okay, now they start building the story up a little bit from here. So let me skip ahead 5 minutes just to put these two disparate things that are out of context in context. When he says, yeah, it has some nickel and cobalt and manganese in there. These things are hard to find on Earth's surface, but you don't know how big the find is.
How many nodules are down there?
It is estimated that there is more nickel, more cobalt, and more manganese than on the rest of the planet.
Now we're talking, this is a financial story. Whenever you get the scarce resources that we need for these batteries that run all our phones and electric cars and whatnot, boom.
Did they say how much is there? How many cars they could do batteries for, estimated?
Wasn't that $150 million? That was like mentioned in there.
Yeah, it's like some ridiculous amount.
But I didn't mark that specific stat.
No, but it was like, wow.
Yeah, and the car batteries are the huge ones. It's like 100,000 of your cell phone batteries.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. And showing that's 3 miles deep, unbelievable depth. But they're showing cameras of going down there. And those nodules are just, it's like they're just, imagine a checkerboard full of checkers, black checkers spaced out on that. And it's just the seabed is just lined with those. And those nodules just keep absorbing that out of the water and keep getting larger. Amazing.
It's a really cool story. And while
it's just, there's one problem.
We're not
it's
in on
3 miles.
Yeah.
First off, with the nodules is the depth of it. It's 3 miles down, which like, that's like, wow. But we're not out there involved in it with some territorial dispute. But what I thought was interesting, who was it that was building the, has the giant machine they put down there started to, it was like a dredge.
Yeah, something. That was the Belgians. It looked like a tank that was a dredge that goes on the bottom of the seafloor.
Yeah, so they attempted to put it down before they lowered it into the water. They realized they had a problem and didn't and took it back to work on. Last thing you want is that monster of a machine going down there and quitting on you because you're never getting it back up. And then somehow it goes, it's designed to go and pick up those nodules and then send it.
It's a big vacuum. It's vacuum, like the vacuum that goes at the bottom of
and send it up to the ship. But they are collecting it small parts at a time, and it's just phenomenal find. I don't know. How would you find that by accident or something? But it was found. Yeah, I was just snooping around the seafloor bed 3 miles down, and look what I found.
I love the story. Like, We can pick on 60 Minutes, you know, particular biases when they show up, but their story selection, they really do pick some interesting stories, and this really is something that is going to drive much of technology and industry going forward, and that is, Gregory, once we do master the technology, how do we just harvest stuff that's 3 miles down off the bottom of the ocean? You know, at some point, we really are going to have to divvy this thing up and parcel it out with boundaries like we do on land. Don't you see that coming in the future and can't be that far away?
Do you really? Just go out there and get some.
What if there's the big nodule play in China and Russia and the United States all want to send little subs down at the same time?
Actually, many of them are right now working on the technology, developing. If they've got subs, they are working on capturing that. And how the UN has it parceled out, China has a pretty big stake. So once again, regardless, okay, we're not participating in it, but the rest of them says, yeah, we're parceling it out. So there is parceling being done. Now, we disagree with how they're dividing up the playground. We're not going to get to play.
Right.
So I understand your take and what's going on with the sea rule.
But you can tell the UN... they probably did this on purpose where like, wow, we have this valuable mineral. We're going to claim control over it and we'll start parceling things out and you can come play. But we're just going to tack it onto this sea treaty that we know the United States doesn't like because this little parcel program started in 2004 from the UN, according to the report here. And the United States wasn't a part of it, but they tack it on to something that they wanted the U.S. to sign on to from decades before now. It's like, well, now you're going to sign on to this? No. Because, look, if we do that, then the UN at any time can board any ship that's going across an ocean. And they can say, well, wait a second. You didn't pay the proper taxes on this. They can collect taxes on all the ships that are going across international waters. They can control where your Navy goes. I'm sorry, you can't have your Navy here. This is a shipping lane that's controlled by the UN. This is our jurisdiction. I'm not going to sign on to that just to go get some rocks. And if the rocks are that important, we'll just go get them anyway.
I didn't pick up that part in the story.
No, they're not going to tell you about the Law of the Sea Treaty. They're going to tell you all the sympathetic stuff so you come away with the impression of, what kind of idiot wouldn't sign on to this treaty? We're getting left behind, and we're just leaving billions and billions and trillions of dollars on the seabed floor, and all we have to do is turn over what? Oh, the sovereignty of all the oceans to the UN. It's a great story. Their solution was ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, but that is attention getting, because what we have going on is a lot of do nothing in Congress. So this, we're disagreeing with that, but we're not doing anything else that I see anyhow.
That's one of the advantages of living in an authoritarian dictatorship, is if you want to invest in C-Tech, you invest in C-Tech right now. It doesn't have to go through Congress. You don't have to worry if someone's not going to get reelected if this gets passed. You don't have to worry about conflicts of interest.
With the U.S. on the sidelines, China has poured hundreds of millions into its deep sea ambitions. Last month, China unveiled its new weapons that included an underwater drone that will patrol the ocean.
If you're in the military, a weapons system, the guidance of our weapons, X-ray machines, microwaves, they all rely on elements that are hard to come by.
So China controls most of these elements from terrestrial sources?
Yes.
And now they're going after the lion's share of the seabed sources?
They certainly are.
I didn't mean to freak you out on your Monday here. Just, you know, have fun on your way home.
So what are you going to do?
Other than that? Well, look, when it really comes to shove, if we want those little rocks, we can go take our big bad Navy out there and we'll just take all the rocks. We don't need anybody's permission. Who's going to stop us? Who, China? Who, France? By the way, on the UN Human Rights Council, just to give you an idea how bad they are with decisions like this. This is the Human Rights Council on it right now. Venezuela, Afghanistan, Sudan, Libya, Somalia, Congo, India, Pakistan. 504-260-0995. I'm James Parker, and we are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. Mike Ponchatoula, you're on Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. What can we do for you, Mike?
Yes. I recently purchased a property with timber on it in Mississippi, and I purchased back in August, and I'm looking to cut the standing timber, and I'm a little confused about the tax implications. The way I understand it is, if I treat it as an investment, I will only be taxed on the profit. And depending on when I cut it and sell it, it'd either be short-term or long-term. Whereas if it's treated as a business, I have to wait a year and a day before it can be treated as capital gains.
So who gave you these scenarios?
I've read about it online, consulted with a CPA. So I'm just kind of double-checking.
So what exactly did the CPA tell you? Are they familiar with this process?
Yeah, it wasn't their bread and butter, but they were confident that was the two of the three possible scenarios.
Confident of two of the three?
Well, they were confident. There's three different scenarios that you could treat the timber sale as. One is a hobby, two as an investment, and then three as a business. That is not their bread and butter. Butter is not something they deal with every day. But after studying up on it, they were confident in the advice they were giving me.
Well, just kind of little bit of information I have here. It looks like under Section 1231 gains, it may be taxed as a long-term capital gain, which probably means that's a holding period. And it also includes both lump sum and pay-as-you-cut timber sales. I would have to dig a little bit more deeper on that. But it is eligible for capital gain tax rates, which are lower than, obviously, ordinary income. The most timber sale income is eligible. Also, capital gain income does not have to pay self-employment tax, which can be close to about 15%.
Yeah, and that's the biggest thing I want to make sure I avoid is that self-employment tax. And that would be taxed on the income period, not just the gross profit. I mean, not just the profit, as I understand it.
Are you going to use a, do you use a tax firm to take care of your taxes and such, or is this kind of a new venture for you?
A new venture.
I would probably reach out to another tax firm and get another opinion.
Okay.
Before I dive in, I'd need to kind of match up some information there.
Did he give you a form, or are you reading from notes? Because you read them exactly in the order that the Forestry Service has in their little short sheet.
Yeah, that was the source, the Forestry Service. That's correct.
Yep. Okay. Then yeah, so they just gave you the summary of this little 30-page PDF from the Forestry Service. And look,
they provide a good bit of information.
Yeah. I just know in the hands of a CPA or someone who does this for a living, this would give you all the answers. I'm not one of those people, though, Gregory.
Oh, I'm not either.
Sorry, Mike.
What this is going to come down to is you're going to take that information and then structure a business entity probably to handle this, is my thinking here on this. So what type of revenue are you talking about, perhaps?
Well, the property, we purchased it at approximately $420,000. And the timber on it is in the neighborhood of 200.
Interesting.
And I was only initially planning on cutting about half the timber value. I'm not really looking to open up a timber business. It's more or less to use the property to keep. And I just want to make sure that if I go cut this timber to put on the principal, I'm not opening myself up to a huge tax liability.
Yeah, trying to minimize the taxes. So get you some of that money back you put into it. So you're going to build structures on it, or have farming plans or something else for it?
You know, probably just maintain, maybe eventually retire there one day, keep it for recreational use.
Yeah, where I grew up, there was a fella down the road who had a few acres of his pines cut down, and the company that did it said, hey, you know, if you let us plant on our way out, we'll come back in 20 years and do this again.
Okay.
So
the good thought, because I was thinking about that. I've known some other people do that. They cut and replant. And it, up where I grew up, Piney Woods area, Hattiesburg, that used to be pretty big business up there, cutting pine trees and growing more.
There's another fellow that cut some forest behind our 40 acres, and they didn't do such a great job. They were kind of sloppy. They didn't replant anything, and they sort of dammed up a creek that was going through the area. So I advise some caution on who you work with, but I know this was a tax question more than a lumberjacking issue.
Absolutely, and I appreciate it. I do plan to replant to a certain extent, and I've got a forester involved, so I think I'm going down the right path there.
Awesome. Well, best of luck to you. Let us know how it goes eventually.
Okay, thanks for the advice.
Thanks, Mike.
Oh, that was an interesting call.
Right, and it's not too far off of what we talked about in the first segment, where, look, if you just have this little set of natural resources, what do you do with it? I mean, how on earth?
Now, he didn't sound like a do-it-yourself or forester. I didn't, you know, sound like, well, you know, I'm going to buy some chainsaws, get a truck.
Oh, my gosh, who would? I'd be interested to see, though, run through the tax scenarios on picking up those nodules, those cobalt nickel. What was the other one? The manganese nodules from the bottom of the ocean. How do you get taxed on that? What was that going to be? Boy, they're going to come up with something for it. All right, so you got to give me 8 cell phone batteries.
Let's see. I might have a, name a island out there. You know, one of the islands, I might just have it a ship based out of there in my dredge built there.
Not too far from Hawaii. That little oval basin there.
You know, it's just, who's going to give me the best tax deal? We'll just start the business and pull them up from there, huh?
Or you could do what China does and just dredge you up an island, just build up yourself an island right next to the oval, or maybe right in the middle of the oval, put a gas station on it.
There's going to be more about that story down the road.
Oh, absolutely.
That is just the beginning.
We need that stuff too bad for this to just end in a pretty no fights, just we all agree to disagree, and whatever happens, we'll figure it out. A little bit more is known about the Myles Garrett NFL suspension, you know, that helmet attack that happened. We're just amazed by that on Saturday's show. Look, the financial side of it, if this suspension is upheld and he misses the rest of the year, we're talking about, he's forfeiting about $1 million in salary, We haven't even got to the fines yet. But that this is the financial ramifications of him taking of Myles Garrett from the Cleveland Browns, taking off Mason Rudolph's helmet and smacking him in the head with it. This is the longest suspension for an on-field action in NFL history. Could extend to the 2020 season. He's going to need approval from Roger Goodell also to get back in. Also, the fines for the teams, $250,000 each.
Both teams in the game were fined?
The organizations themselves were fined that much.
Wow.
You know, I don't want to speak too soon because he may be a bad guy, but his apology when I came across it, I can't dismiss it. I think it might be genuine. I think he may really understand how dumb and crazy what he did is and may feel a little contrition and kind of a big believer in second chances. I might be willing to give this guy a second chance, Gregory. Is that crazy?
It is.
All right, we'll do the numbers next. If you have a financial situation, not quite sure what to do, you can call Gregory, 504-260-0995. I'm James Parker, and we are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.
Just 6% of the 45 million Americans that have student loans hold 33% of the nation's $1.5 trillion of outstanding loans. The group is comprised of borrowers with at least 100,000 of outstanding student debt. That's from the Brookings Institute. Oh, another stat here I thought was super interesting. Who would you guess has the largest homeless population?
What are my categories?
50 states.
Oh, I would say California.
Okay. Could you put a percentage to that if you had, say, knowing there's 50 states, they hold the most. So what would that percentage be?
Man, they hold like 16% of the population, and they're probably more likely than other states to have. So I would say 22%.
Darn, you're close. 23.5%.
Wow. Holy smokes. That's really good, Parker. Yeah.
We're not making it up. U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development provided us that data.
Oh, wait, hang on a second. Isn't this the state that's always lecturing us on how we don't treat the poor properly and how we're just mean to people and downtrodden and crush them underfoot? And it can't be right. I must be thinking of another California.
Well, I've got another interesting story for you.
Okay.
This evening, FedEx closes their pension plan to new hires.
Another one. They're almost gone. They're going the way of the dinosaur.
They really are. The shipping giant announced that it's closing its pension plan to new U.S. hires starting next year, joining the ranks of U.S. companies phasing out guaranteed retirement benefits. The shipping giant, and I'm pulling... Where did I get this article from?
Highlights for Children, I think.
It's a Associated Press. Heather Gillers contributed to this article. Just give
that's
some
way
credit.
Better,
yeah. And Paul Ziobro. Okay, so moving on. We've give the credits here. So FedEx is part of it's. So go back up here. Since I gave the credits, I lost my place. Okay, so they will launch a new 401k at the start of 2021 with a higher company match. Under the new plan, FedEx will contribute up to 8% of employee salaries if the employees contribute 6% of their salary. Pretty good match on that. That's generous. So,
well, you tell me, you see a ton more of these than I do. That's kind of rare air there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Their chief rival, United Parcel Service, Inc., closed its pension plan to new workers in 2016. And FedEx said in a memo to employees Monday that just 22% of Fortune 50 companies, I wonder if that's accurate, they meant Fortune 500, companies, and 11% of transportation companies offer pensions to their new hires. So they stated as Fortune in the article here, Fortune 50 companies, just 22% and 11% of transportation companies offer pensions to new hires. So they basically, they're a nice PR statement here is, as we continue to evolve FedEx retirement benefits to remain competitive, we recognize that more and more people understand the value of the 401k structure.
Oh, come on now.
Oh, there's more to the, I thought you would like that. It's like, man, that's painting it good. We recognize the value of 401k, so we're going to switch over to those. New hires will be eligible to participate in the current 401k plan, which matches up to 3.5% of salaries until the new plan launches. Existing workers will have the option to continuing under the pension plan and existing 401k, or transition to the new 401k with the higher match. FedEx said that the changes were made to give employees more control over their savings, and that 401k retirement plans with higher matches make the company more competitive. You're going to like this last part here even more.
Is some other spin on how they're doing their workers a favor?
It's going to bring all this into focus for us here. So a year after closing its pension plan and new hires, UPS in 2017 said it would freeze pension plans for the 70,000 of its non-union workers beginning in 2023. Now, that's what I was thinking when I first read this earlier, is, okay, yeah, they're stopping it. The existing ones are going to get to continue until they decide to freeze that. And that's an example here where UPS froze the pension altogether 1 year after they stopped that. So meaning they no longer accrue additional benefits for future service. The company will instead make contribution to the employees' 401k accounts. And I'm sure FedEx may have picked this up from them, that, you know, it gives them more freedom on their retirement choices.
Well, you're soft selling it. They have to do it because math dictates so.
Well, comes the math.
Okay.
FedEx in May of 2018 said it reached a deal with MetLife under which the insurer would take responsibility for about $6 billion of pension payments to about 41,000 retirees and beneficiaries. FedEx had a pension deficit of nearly $4 billion and obligations of $28.9 billion at the end of fiscal year ended May 31st of 2019. There's your answer. The whole thing's wrapped up. Why? It's wrapped up right there. $32 billion. Four behind and obligated for another $28 billion.
You know, some people are
going
to
see, and it's only going to get worse.
Some people are going to see that headline. They're going to be like, one of these evil corporations acting all corporation. He's just making cuts at the expense of the lowest, the workers, giving up their whole life just so the rich fat cats can light their cigars with $100 bills or whatever the stereotype is. When in reality is, they should have made that change about 20 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is a problem that they have to solve now. Yeah. Spin it to a good light. I understand it, but the math, this isn't like, oh, this evil FedEx. No, this is a survival thing because the math is not working. People are living longer. It's changing all those numbers.
I'm not sure if they can survive even with these changes. I didn't know they had $28 billion in liabilities hanging over their head like a Wile E. Coyote anvil.
Yeah, and look, they have 41,000 retirees and widows.
They are supporting 41,000 households that aren't lifting up one box.
Don't work there anymore or anything. You know, it's like somebody retires and you just keep contributing to their 401k for as long as they live. That would think of the pension in those terms. Just like, when does this obligation end? What do you mean? Each decade they're living 1.6% longer?
Well, and
what's that going to cost?
You threw boxes.
Billions?
Yeah, you threw boxes for them for a couple of decades. Now they have to take care of you and your family for the rest of your biological life.
It made sense, 50 years ago?
Well, when you died after your first heart attack, it made sense. I know people who've had four heart attacks. I know people who've had six strokes. Six, Greg.
People are living longer. Here's the core reason. Smoking has reduced.
It's a big part of it.
That is part of it. People are more health conscious. They eat better. And oh my gosh, the technology and science.
Have you ever thought about what all these actuarial tables and balance sheets are going to look like if we can ever figure out cancer? If we can figure out how to stop and reverse tumor growths, we're living to 120.
It's coming.
That sounds fun. All right, we got to do the numbers next, and I want to play this callback for Gregory. This guy, he wants to pass on his IRA to his kids, but how can he do it tax efficiently, avoid the taxes? It wasn't really that good of an answer. Wasn't what he wanted. All right, I'm going to try and squeeze in this highlight call from Saturday's show and then get your response from it.
Okay.
Craig Metairie, you're next up on Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. What can we do for you, Craig?
Hi, I just had a question. One of the things that came to my mind in terms of trying to keeping it going, so to speak, in terms of wealth building, was using maybe my IRA or 401k to kind of perpetually grow. I don't know if that's possible. Like maybe change a designation on, say, an IRA to like maybe my son, and have that keep on growing for 40 years. Is that possible? Is there a way to perpetually grow like this nest that instead of taking it out to kind of keep it going?
As the law stands right now, you have the stretch opportunity, meaning when you die, you can leave that IRA, that 401k to your son. You designate them as the beneficiary of the account. If you have multiple kids or spouse and kids, it's beneficiary designations is how that pass. And it can be multi-generational. Now, when you pass it to a non-spouse, they are going to have to take required minimum distributions based on their age if they're a named beneficiary starting the year after death. So depending on their age, and if they're young, it's going to be small portions, and it increases over their lifetime, and then they indeed could pass it on as well. Now, and that's why I said under current law, what is going on in Congress whenever they do get to it is there is a bill sitting out there that's been passed by the House, which is going to take away the stretch. And it looks like what will happen if that does indeed get passed, Craig, is that when you die, leave it to, say, for example, your son as the primary beneficiary, he will have to take the money out of that account over a 10-year period is what is proposed in that bill. Doesn't mean he has to spend the net, but he's going to pay taxes on it and then continue with that money working. So it kind of affects the perpetual part, but it doesn't mean it has to end. It just, Uncle Sam's going to want his taxes in a shorter period of time instead of over the next 100 years. Was that what you were looking for?
Okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, you know, I knew that there had to be some kind of distribution. I was just wondering, maybe while I'm still alive, can I just change it from my name to his?
You cannot.
Be on his time timeline. You know what I mean? Time.
You cannot without it. Okay. Now, you can gift that money to him, but it's a taxable event.
Oh, I see.
See, that, well, and that's the problem with doing that.
Even a Roth?
Well, once again, you're titling it to him, and let me just give you an example of a Roth. You do not have to take required minimum distributions from a Roth IRA under current law. And I don't expect that to change no matter what your age is. You do not have to take RMDs from a Roth. But your non-spouse beneficiary will have to take required minimum distributions from a Roth. It will not be taxable to them either, but they will have to take distributions. I don't understand the sense of that since there isn't a tax attached to it. But you change that if you were to gift that money to them, because essentially you're taking it out of the Roth account to do so while you're living and they're living.
What do you think, Craig?
Oh, I see. Okay.
Digestion.
No, that's great. No, that answers. I was just trying to, hey, is this a way to, if I just change the name on it, then maybe.
All right. We're back live now. That was good stuff from Craig in Metairie. I like his sentiment, though. How do I get this big IRA to my kids? But is there some way to avoid the big old tax bill?
You get that a lot. I had somebody the other day looking at retiring, and they're kind of like, okay, I need to create some tax efficiency. Well, 100% of their money, essentially 100% of their money is in qualified account, IRAs, 401ks like that. They get very little in Roth. Yeah, so it's all going to be taxed as ordinary income. Now, where can you create tax efficiencies? Maybe if you think, or if it looks like you're going to pay more in taxes in the future, you want to pay some of those taxes now, can create some efficiency. One of the novel ideas, you heard me mention before, is maybe that IRA should start buying some life insurance on you. And when you do die, that insurance can create the tax-free benefit or wash the taxes.
Ah, but what do you know?
Yeah. Life insurance pays a tax-free death benefit. So how can you use that in planning? There's a lot of ways to do so. You're probably wondering why I'm on this show. What can I do? Well, I have a financial firm, Gregory Ricks and Associates. We help people with their money. We give advice. We give guidance. We do counseling. And we do planning. If you'd like to have a deeper conversation, maybe even about creating tax efficiency, call my office, 504-832-9200, whether you're in Gulfport, Metairie, Louisiana, or Mandeville, Louisiana.
Your home away from the show is winningatlife.com and the Winning at Life app. I'm James Parker, and we are Winning at Life with Greg Rericks.
Investment advisory services offered only by duly registered individuals through AE Wealth Management, LLC. AE Wealth Management, Gregory Ricks & Associates, W.J. Blanchard Law, LLC, J. Heath & Company, and Mortgage Gumbo are not affiliated companies. Investing involves risk, including the potential loss of principal. Any references to protection, safety, or lifetime income generally refer to fixed insurance products, never securities or investments. Insurance guarantees are backed by the financial strength and claims-paying abilities of the issuing carrier. This radio show is intended for informational purposes only. It is not intended to be used as the sole basis for financial decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the particular needs of an individual situation. Annuities are insurance contracts designed for retirement or other long-term needs. They provide guarantees of principal and credited interest, subject to surrender charges. Annuity guarantees and protections are backed by the financial strength and claims paying ability of the issuing insurer. Hypothetical examples have been provided for illustrative purposes only. It does not represent a real-life scenario and should not be construed as advice designed to meet the particular needs of an individual situation. Gregory Ricks & Associates is not permitted to offer, and no statement made during the show shall constitute legal or tax advice. Our firm is not affiliated or endorsed by the U.S. government or any governmental agency. The information and opinions contained herein provided by third parties have been obtained from sources believed to be reliable, but accuracy and completeness cannot be guaranteed by Gregory Ricks & Associates. We are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.